I got it. It might be a little hokey. I was going to start with the Jefferson quote.
Go for it.
George Jefferson.
George, not, yes, of course, George, to fit the show. In matters of style, swim with the current. In matters of principle, fly to Texas and get a new set of veneers. Nothing? Come on. Nothing?
Previously on Dakota Town Hall.
What Amendment F is going to do is going to ask voters again via the legislature to see if they want to have the ability to place work requirements onto the Medicaid expansion population, which is contrary to what the language was on Amendment D that was voted for by, I want to say it was 56 or 57% by South Dakota voters in 2022.
Welcome to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly political podcast.
And welcome to a very special episode of Dakota Town Hall from Murdoch in the West, Jake in the East. And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, this is your inaugural episode of the Dakota Town Hall Billies.
Get your tuxes, get your bow ties. It's a big one.
Can't loosen the tie on this episode. It's bow tie all in, baby.
No loosening the tie. We have a star-studded guest group today.
I mean, if you're going to do the Billies,
got to have the best, which includes the petulant blogger, Pat Powers.
The ungovernable Pat Powers.
And, of course, the most visited guest, Representative Tony Van Huysen, our history expert.
Third host,
really.
Making my maybe 17th appearance, somewhere in there.
We need you.
It's becoming significant.
So it's it's the Billies, everybody. So pour yourself a, make an old-fashioned, pour yourself a martini. Pinkies out like a man as we talk about the most impactful bills, maybe the bills that miss the mark. We've got a couple of awards. We've got the, are we calling it the Angry Vlogger Award? What are we calling it, Pat?
Well, I'm not angry. I'm a happy person.
Right. I've always thought so too.
I always like the ungovernable Pat Powers Award, really.
I like that. We also, you know, try to add a touch of class to this deal. We have the THV Award. Or awards, is it going to be, Tony? We kind of, you know, it's the first run. We can kind of make it up as we go a little.
I just prepared one. We can think of more, I guess.
No, one is going to be golden. We've got all kinds of Billies. So we're going to get into that. Also, we have a pretty in-depth new candidate roundup today, as long as we got everybody on the horn, including who we usually rip off new candidate roundup anyway, Mr. Pat Powers.
You know, and I might even have one hot off the press that isn't even reported yet.
Oh, look at that. Hot tease. You know, we should have, with, you know, Jake, with a little time, we could have whipped out like a Billy Crystal number. You know what I mean? Like, Tom Pischke likes cloud seeding and there wasn't a law about breast milk.
You and I both know we do not work that hard to get that done.
This is really hard to rhyme something with Odenbach. All right, Jake, where do you want to start with the 2024 Billies?
Well, let's start with our happy blogger, not angry blogger, the ungovernable Pat Powers. Pat, what do you feel like deserves your award this year?
Well, you know, and I would give it a bit of good news and bad news. You know, obviously, there's always things you can find fault with during session, and I often do, but you know, I'd start by pointing out a bright spot. On a positive note, what really stood out to me the most from session was the package put together by legislative leadership to preserve landowner rights and provide parameters for ethanol producers to move forward with carbon capture pipelines. The Senate Bill 201 and House Bills 1185 and 1186 package. You know, and I put that on the positive because you know, that package represented something that's getting harder and harder to achieve in this political environment, and that's solving problems and finding compromise for the greater good. You know, how often do we get to say that the legislature came together and fixed something? And, you know, last few years, there's a lot of feuding and people obstructing, but you know, they came together and it had a pretty good healthy vote margin. You know, Senate Bill 201 and associated bills were a rare compromise where the legislature is able to move things forward and find middle ground. You know, and really politics represent the art of compromise. We bring people together that disagree and carve out a path forward. And we do too little of that anymore. And so that's my bright point for the Billies is that the, you know, we got something done that was getting to be a more and more contentious problem. And Governor wasted no time in signing that.
She was real quick on that one.
You know, and if we talk about the low points, that would be Senate Bill 215, an act to prohibit the intentional release of polluting emissions into the atmosphere by cloud seeding, weather modification, excessive electromagnetic radio frequency, microwave radiation, and it's you know, oh my God, that just
this one's this is on my list too.
You know, and what that was Tom Pischke's bill to allow the governor and or county sheriffs to call out the National Guard if they suspected cloud seeding activity or even better, xenobiotic agents or excessive levels of electromagnetic radiation. So the sheriff was given carte blanche to issue cease and desist orders for any facility doing that. Now, and it also talked about lasers, you know, so
lasers,
laser
beams. Lasers.
So, you know, imagine if you're like the Edmonds County Sheriff, you know, how many county sheriffs have that equipment to measure electromagnetic radiation, much less determine if they've got extreme low frequency alternating current or lasers with harmful effects? Because what that bill is probably going to end up doing, if it actually had any traction, that's going to have deputies chasing every report of a laser pointer that came in from the local crackpot, and the caller saying, you need to get the sheriff out and get them to issue a C&D against these kids. You know, that's what it's going to do. And as I said, that bill came from Senator Tom Pischke, who pulled his crackpot.
Your buddy, Tom.
You know, he pulled that crackpot conspiracy measure from some national group pushing goofball legislation. There were exact same language and proposals posted on change.org. So Tom's pulling his legislation from change.org. It was introduced in the Minnesota legislature, introduced in New Hampshire. You know, no one in South Dakota is expressing concern over cloud seeding and xenobiotic radiation, except Tom Pischke, maybe Laura Hubble, but we don't hear too much from her anymore.
Well, aren't you going to feel stupid in a couple years if, like, you know, aliens land in District 30 and Julie Fry Mueller's got the xeno whatever laser?
She's got her laser pointer
and,
out.
And, you know, and saves our bacon.
You know, my other honorable mention for the low light of session would be House Commemoration HC 8020.
Oh, sure.
Where Phil Jensen sponsored a resolution honoring Pat Powers for his years of service to the South Dakota Republican Party.
That was my most impactful.
That was withdrawn by the sponsor, and thankfully so, because that's kind of a big ick factor. It's like, you know, if I got a medal from the Proud Boys or an award from David Duke, hard pass.
I'm telling you. This
not to show up for that award show. I'll show up for the Billies, but,
telling you,
but not for the Proud Boy Award.
Ungovernable Pat Powers is here. It is Pat Powers' hot girl summer, baby.
Well, unfortunately, Senator Pitchy is not here to accept the award. Well, Patty, I think Pitchy gave you plenty of rope on that cloud seeding bill, and I think you really enjoyed that one.
And we didn't even talk about syrup.
Well, we had plenty of coverage on syrup.
We got just, don't you wish, well, you know, show's not over.
Pat is such a considerate guy. Pishy can't be here to accept it, but Pat is going to alert all his constituents by mail.
Yes.
You know, that there is that.
Very considerate. Very considerate.
Thoughtful, I thought.
Yeah.
All right. This is, we're starting off hot and we're setting the high water mark up there. It's the first Billy's here on Dakota Town Hall. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear the most impactful bills, the ones that maybe missed the mark, and the first ever THV award. It's Dakota Town Hall. We'll be right back.
Do you love whiskey, but you feel lost in the world of peat and proof? Well, Whiskey at Work is your water cooler for all things amber. Join Rob and I for tastings, tips, and fun facts every once in a while. No suits, no snobbery, just good times and great pours. It's Whiskey at Work, wherever you get your podcasts.
A healthy community builds a strong community. That's why Black Hills Surgical Hospital provides medical excellence, ensuring your safety. We're the number one hospital in the nation for major orthopedic surgery, and our commitments extend to
Hi, I'm Mark Houston, the host of Doc Talk with Monument Health.
I tell people every organ in your body that has a blood vessel is affected by cardiovascular disease, by definition.
The average prostate in a young man in his 20s is about the size of a walnut, and it can grow to the size of a softball.
He always tells the patient when we're together, he's like, I'm the kind of doctor that you want to see so you don't see my wife. So I really don't want our path to cross in the, right. the clinic.
Doc Talk from Monument Health. Wherever you get your podcasts.
I am here with Weston and Tanish Chapman from Black Hills Tire. Let's talk about how Black Hills Tire was initially created.
Weston has had a dream since he was probably 16.
You know what? There was just a lot of things I wanted to do differently and couldn't do them without creating Black Hills Tire. Then we were able to actually put all that stuff in motion, and we're going to prioritize service over profit, prioritize taking care of people over car count.
You make sure you take care of your people, your customers. They come first.
Check us out at Black Hills Tire.
Welcome back to South Dakota's most listened to political podcast on a very special episode of The Billies, Jake.
Yeah, and we heard from the petulant blogger Pat Powers first with his great bills he brought to us for his awards.
Coming hard in the paint first into the show.
Oh yeah. Well, he's ungovernable.
What are you gonna do? He's ungovernable.
Next on our awards is the THV Award, the Tony Henry Van Huysen Award. This award has to do with historicity. Not historicity, that's the wrong word for that.
No, historicity is exact. Historicity is now the title of the show.
Historical significance in bills that passes here. Representative Van Huysen, who is the winner of the THV Award?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I don't really think I can top Pat. I mean, that was a whole shtick.
That was a very entertaining routine.
I feel very unprepared now. You know, this is kind of a tricky question. First of all, I would say there are a lot of bills that are not historically significant. I mean, there's some that passed that I already have forgotten about. So I'm pretty certain history will not remember them either. Not that they're bad bills necessarily, but a lot of these are pretty small in the scheme of things. You know, a couple of my runners up before I get to the winner. I think the creation of the Office of Indigent Legal Services is a historically significant thing. That's something
I agree.
That's an office that will provide some of the indigent legal representation at the state level rather than at the county level. For the whole history of our state, that's been a county service. Now we'll be doing that at the state level, and I expect that will grow over time. That's a pretty big change in that system, and I think will be looked back on as being very significant. I would also mention, not to give myself an award here, but Senator Wheeler and I had HCR 6003, which will commemorate the 100th legislative session next year, which I think is a good project to help us celebrate South Dakota history. It's maybe not that historical in and of itself, but I'm very excited about that. We're having our first meeting on veto day. Have a great committee. We have two former legislators who are appointed to the committee, Matt Michaels and Bernie Hunhoff. So we got the real all-star team here.
Great choices.
Yeah, so that's going to be a fun one. But my winner, I think, would be Senate Bill 49, which appropriates more than $200 million toward the construction of a men's prison. And, the state penitentiary that we are using today was built in 1881. It's more than 140 years old. It's older than the state. So it's a pretty significant milestone when we finally retire that building and move on to a new facility. And that'll be a major, major expense for the state and a big change. and a facility that will be used for longer than any of us are around. So I think that's probably the most historically significant thing we did this year, is the move toward a new men's prison.
I think, the functions of government, right? It's hard to make it, and I know everybody in Lincoln County is mad, but like getting a state prison off the ground after one that was built in the 1800s is going to be, it's like sewage. It's not very fun. It's not very exciting, you know, but it's a need. This is what the government's kind of, you know, kind of supposed to be doing here, right? I'm with you. I think this is on my list for one of the most impactful bills.
Well, and I'm guessing that, $200 million is probably a drop in the bucket of the lawsuits we'd be seeing if we didn't do anything.
It's going to be standing for a long time, too, just like the current one. I mean, it's going to be there for a long time.
And I said this when we were debating the bill in the House. We're really lucky that it's very unusual that we have this kind of money in South Dakota.
Right.
I mean, all through the Dugard administration, we kind of knew something was going to happen with this men's prison, but we never had the money to do anything about it. And so a lot of credit really goes to the governor here. I mean, there's a lot more fun things she could be doing with this money, or politically advantageous things, but she's taking the hit and putting a bunch of this money into prison construction, and that's what we need to do. So good for her.
Completely agree.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for your first THV award. That was a very worthy winner, I believe. And next, we're moving on to some of the more bills that me and Murdoch have put together. We will start with the left field bill, the Miss the Mark.
I mean, Pat's shot on Pishke is it's just gonna be like somebody retelling a comedian bit, so I'll throw that back into the mix.
It's a classic runner-up. You could put the Aunt Jemima thing in here, definitely a left field missed the mark, but the one I think really that truly missed the mark, not just since that it was a dumb bill, but also that it just didn't have any chance of standing if it passed anyway, and that would be Bethany Soy's HB 1239, as Pat called it, the boohoo. My name isn't on that bill.
Is this the sample?
Yes,
ballot.
It
deal?
Is the sample ballot bill that is against the First Amendment, and had it passed the House and was killed in the Senate. I think this bill really is a left field, miss the mark type of bill.
Just being the lone Republican pothead contingent of this state, it seems. I'd think the notify your primary care is stupid because there's no way it's going to function at all. But good luck.
We were there for that bill in the House lobby while it was being argued.
Yeah, I watched all the business being killed.
And we're sitting there going, this just doesn't make a lot of sense at the end of the day.
I get it. It's an election year. That's fine. You kick our industry. We're not quite real yet anyway. It's fine, guys. It's fine.
Any input from our guest here?
Yeah, what bills missed the mark? Not worst bills. That's, not really trying to punch down, but like what almost shouldn't have made it to the floor.
I'm just thinking too. I mean, I would tend to agree on that. Bethany Soy measure, that was offensive. You know, equally offensive was her anti-porn bill, and I say that not because anybody, you know, wants anybody's kids to see that stuff, but you know, and it goes with the book bans that we're dealing with here in Brookings. It's I'm capable of being a parent. I don't need more government to tell me how to be a parent. If I'm going to police that stuff, I'm going to police that stuff. And, I don't want to sound libertarian, but, every time we have these programs, we expand government. So all these people who talk about how conservative they are, they keep bringing these bills for more government. So
well, I don't think they care when they're trying to reach into your bedroom, Pat. That's my issue with the Republican Party. You're making the middle of the Republican Party that doesn't care about these extreme issues at all side with you or someone else based on the 10% of the ding dongs.
I don't know if they don't care about this type of issue with the porn and children. I just think that the way they're going about it is very hard to govern, right? I mean, that's why they're probably going to do a summer study on internet and how we can actually effectively legislate the internet. So I don't think people are necessarily against it. It's just very hard to govern and very hard to bring it up in this way.
Well, you know, and in fact, if you, you know, half the time I go on Twitter and you've got people who randomly put up stuff you don't necessarily want your kids to see, and I'm not talking about the main posts on Twitter, but, you know, in some of the replies, you know, they're salting it with that stuff. And so does that mean we're going to have to put in our credit cards to view Twitter? You know, does that mean the same thing with Google? You do a search on Google and it can be maybe not even intentional, and you end up with some results that maybe are a little off color. So are we supposed to give our personal information then to Google to be able to access Google?
Yeah, when you Google hot goss, you should see what shows up. Oh, just a bunch of, never mind. Tony, you were going to say. Yes, please. Yeah.
Well, my pick, and you know, I hate to pick on him because I think this was a well-intentioned bill, but House Bill 1236 was Kevin Jensen's bill, recognized students as Rushmore State athletes upon demonstrating prescribed levels of physical fitness. You know, I sit next to Kevin Jensen in caucus, and when he pitched this bill in caucus, I leaned over to him and just said, you know, Kevin, I just want you to know on physical fitness, I'm really on the other side of this issue. Going to be a firm no. I thought I might be the only no, but actually that bill only passed the House, 46-24. And it was funny because me, Linda Duba, Phil Jensen, all on the same side on this one. It was the real power axis. You can't find a lot of votes where the three of us are together unless they're like unanimous votes.
It's hard to get you guys all against on one thing. Yeah. That's nice. Look at everybody coming together.
And for completely different reasons, but I just, when it comes to physical fitness, I'm pretty firmly on the other side of this issue.
I like it. So hard stance.
It's like flashbacks to the junior high presidential fitness awards where, you know, you're sitting there struggling to do a pull up because I don't have big hands.
Well, and that's what this was. And I guess according to Kevin, I didn't realize this, but they've done away with the presidential fitness certificate.
Really?
Like,
and so his,
or does it be, we're just too fat?
So his,
like, wow, well, these kids I are so know, fat. His, there's nothing we can do about it.
I think what motivated this bill was to have like a state level replacement for that. So, like I said, I think his heart was in the right place, but it didn't go the distance.
The Dennis Dugard Physical Fitness Award. I'd be like Joe Foss or somebody like real, you know.
Probably, yeah, that'd probably be the one to
some,
do it.
Some dude who can do pinky finger push-ups.
The Bill Janklow Physical Fitness Award.
That's what I'm currently on.
Yeah, that doesn't quite check out.
Bill Janklow has said he believes God only gives you so many heartbeats. And if you exercise, you just use them up faster.
It's hard to argue with that logic.
I'm thinking of that, and the picture for it can be him, that picture of him smoking a cigarette by the school bus. You know what I'm talking about? A great photo. It's my all-time favorite Bill Janklow photo.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Jake, what's the next bill?
Well, it's what we're calling our moonshot bill, a bill that was, you know, either ahead of its time or didn't have a high chance of passing, but really ahead of its time sort of is what we're looking at here. We had, there was a lot of different contenders or pieces of this one. You had a great idea, Murdoch.
I think this is Caden Whitman's school food bill, you know, feed them kids bill or whatever it was.
You know,
look at the hard look I get from Tony. You don't think we got $200 million for the men's prison. We're all taking a bow out. We can't write a couple of shekels for a bologna sandwich. Get out of here.
This one made just the appropriations man inside of Tony just revolted when he heard that.
You want to get, you want to reduce your prison costs. You feed some kids when they're six so they can learn math.
Pretty sure I made the motion to kill that bill.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty sure you did.
Well, I mean, that definitely was a moonshot bill. I think that's fair to say that it had a very hard chance of passing.
I know I did because I got this letter from a guy sitting right here. And it opens.
I might have emailed him.
Did I tell you this? No, we can tell by your appearance, Representative Van Huysen, we can tell by your appearance that you get plenty to eat.
That was not me. I didn't send this.
I'm getting a little hot there. So then my daughter opens my mail and is reading this. And she's like, what does she mean by that, Dad?
Like, the district, is that a constituent of your area?
No, this would be a no, he's from Rapid City. Oh. I will answer it. I haven't yet, but I will.
Well, that's certainly a moonshot bill. I also think the deep fake AI bill that was brought by, was that Wheeler and Liz Larson? Mm-hmm. Is that who was?
I think no, so. It was Drew Peterson.
Oh, Sue Peterson, sorry.
Liz Larson.
Sue Peterson, Liz Larson.
Wheeler might have been on it, too.
Bit of a moonshot bill. I think it was ahead of its time, that's for sure. I think that it also kind of falls in a similar spot where that porn bill does too. That's very, we don't really know how we can govern the internet yet in South Dakota. It's very difficult to do. So I do think that was ahead of its time. And
go ahead, Tony.
That would have been my pick for this category too, where it seemed like everybody kind of saw that there was an issue here, but we're not quite sure yet what to do about it. And I know there's some thought about doing a summer study on some of these topics. I don't know if we'll end up doing that or not, but
I don't know.
I mean, the whole world is contending with this. Nobody's quite figured out how to regulate AI.
That is what it is no one knows what to do yet. I don't think I don't mean this to be rude, but the answer ain't going to come out of a South Dakota summer study. Trying to do a summer study in AI is like trying to do a summer study on the color green. It's too vast. You got to narrow it down to start to study something, and putting it, dialing it into elections is a mistake.
Yeah, I do think they had a fairly narrow focus, though, in terms of this is basically a fraud issue at some point.
Yeah.
And so I do think there's room in state law to say you have to have a disclosure. It can't be fraudulent. You can't, you know, I do think there's probably a role the state can play in this, but we just got to get our arms around it.
You know, you were talking about Whitman's bill for school lunches. You know, I would give her kudos because with the bill that she and Sidney Davis brought to establish a minimum age for marriage. I kind of surprised that we're still in the 1850s. And
roughly what I was emailing Mortensen. That was the one hot thing I got on back and forth with Will on this year. This stupid child marriage thing.
You know, as somebody with five daughters, you know, there's a lot better alternatives, you know, with somebody who might feel they need to get married. There's better alternatives than doubling down their misery with an underage marriage.
Yes.
I mean, good Lord.
Well, good. That's the same scene. That's the problem, Pat. Sorry. I mean, we're just, you know, we're protecting the child shotgun wedding marriage. Look at Tony just sits back until we're done. It's like, I'm going to put it in neutral. I'll put it back in gear when they're done. I ain't touching this with a 10-foot pole. It's just silly. It's just whatever. We've all heard my case on it.
Let's move on to really our gold star, our kind of the movie of the year, the best actor, the most impactful bill award. This was certainly very many impactful bills this year, I would say. A lot of things happened this year. We have many runner-ups. Where would you like to start, Murdoch?
I mean, you know, my most impactful, you know, Tony, it's you know, we have multiple winners. We got bills getting multiple trophies. This prison bill is pretty game changing, and it's boring, and it's not, oh my God, look at all the things, you know what I mean? You can't scream about housing with it and et cetera, you know what I mean? But it's needed.
you know, I agree. And in the same vein, the Landowner Bill of Rights, that is a hugely impactful piece. Pat talked about it in his section. And that's going to, for someone on the east side of the state too, specifically, the amount I hear about the pipelines, to find compromise and get that done in one session with three comprehensive bills, that was impactful. And you can't, the work that Casey Crabtree and Will Morton did to get that together and done, you can't give them enough there. It was fantastic.
Yeah, can I just, I want to just add on that, because, you know, there are people who like those bills or don't, or they like the pipeline or don't, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of opinion there, but that's what makes that whole package so remarkable, is if you went back a year ago, the House and Senate were on totally different planets on this issue. And the idea that they would come up with anything that could pass both houses would have just seemed crazy. And the fact that they were able to do so, I think, really is remarkable. And I, you know, certainly on the House side, Will Mortensen, of course, is a good friend of mine, but he's a rancher and an ag business lawyer, and was just perfectly situated to work on this, because these are the issues that he deals with all the time, and he actually understands them. So we were very fortunate to have his perspective. I just,
yeah, you know, and I would add to that. I know last session, I mean, Will was definitely on the other side of the issue, mm-hmm. when it came to, you know, the landowner advocacy. So him being part of the solution, you know, I mean, I think that helped move that over to something where we couldn't get it done last time. And here it was passing with 40 votes in the House.
And these bills added more landowner rights and more landowner protections. And to the extent there was opposition, it was really from people who wanted even more.
They didn't want to compromise.
But
the bills that they were advancing were never going to pass.
Right.
So at some point, a lot of times in the legislature, you have to say to someone, well, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, right? If you go for your perfect bill, you're going to get nothing. If you go for a good bill that can actually pass, you actually end up ahead of the deal.
It's a Republican primary year. You're speaking crazy.
That's one of those. It's become this really dirty word on the far right. The idea of compromise has become a dirty word, when it's like, that is what politics is. You have to compromise to find solutions, you know, like this.
And my district is 10 square miles in Sioux Falls. It's not a huge issue in my district, but again, the people who voted for this bill voted to increase landowner protections
significantly. You could never pass this in another year.
No, yeah, and so I don't think we should lose sight of that. Is who's going to use what as an election? It is going to be kind of interesting to see, because a lot of these people who say they're very for landowner rights voted against these bills that increase landowner protections. So which is it?
And you,
he just wrote the mailer. Which is it? With this, Tony, with the black and white face.
My district compared to yours are they're very
what
close.
Happened to Jake Schoenbeck?
What happened indeed?
I didn't vote on anything. I tried to get there. I couldn't last time. The
80 votes, please. That's what happened.
Yeah. But you're right, Tony. Your district is not a big for you, it's not, no one's talking about it or not talking very much in your district versus mine, which is, you know, it's partially Sioux Falls, but it's heavy ag in my district.
Right.
And
right.
So it's a huge right. issue. So I think it's very impactful. Murdoch, I think you also had another bill that I actually like your idea on for impactful.
My sleeper impactful is, and we'll go to break with this. I think that airport funding thing, I know it got from this money to that money, but, that getting through with some cash, and I guess I don't know where it's at. Is the governor going to sign that? Do you guys know?
She did
already? Okay, signed it yesterday. So, like, that's... Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the money you get back into that sort of investment and, you know, due respect to like the Mitchell Airport or whatever, you put that right in Rapid City and Sioux Falls, and it's a 3-1 right back into the market. And then that gets recycled 6 times. So like it's too easy of a money multiplier of a need for both Rapid and Sioux Falls.
I think that's a very good point. And a bill you would not expect to be in this category, but definitely deserves it.
Well, we got to take a break. when we come back, you can't go anywhere, because with the most in-depth new candidate roundup, shinier than a new set of Texas teeth, Jake, it's next on Dakota Town Hall.
Dakota Town Hall will be right back after a quick word from our partners.
Do you love whiskey, but you feel lost in the world of peat and proof? Well, Whiskey at Work is your water cooler for all things amber. Join Rob and I for tastings, tips, and fun facts every once in a while. No suits, no snobbery, just good times and great pours. It's Whiskey at Work, wherever you get your podcasts.
A healthy community builds a strong community. That's why Black Hills Surgical Hospital provides medical excellence, ensuring your safety. We're the number one hospital in the nation for major orthopedic surgery, and our commitments extend to
Hi, I'm Mark Houston, the host of Doc Talk with Monument Health.
I tell people every organ in your body that has a blood vessel is affected by cardiovascular disease, by definition.
The average prostate in a young man in his 20s is about the size of a walnut, and it can grow to the size of a softball.
He always tells the patient when we're together, he's like, I'm the kind of doctor that you want to see so you don't see my wife. So I really don't want our path to cross in the, right. in the clinic.
Doc Talk from Monument Health. Wherever you get your podcasts.
I am here with Weston and Tanish Chapman from Black Hills Tire. Let's talk about how Black Hills Tire was initially created.
Weston has had a dream since he was probably 16.
You know what? There was just a lot of things I wanted to do differently and couldn't do them without creating Black Hills Tire. Then we were able to actually put all that stuff in motion, and we're going to prioritize service over profit, prioritize taking care of people over car count.
You make sure you take care of your people, your customers. They come first.
Check us out at blackhillstire.com.
And now back to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's premier political podcast.
And we're back here wrapping up on South Dakota's most listened to political podcast. I'm Murdoch in the West. We've got Jake in the East, and it's the Billies, Jake.
Yes, we are wrapping up our award part, and now we're going to kind of the live performance part where they bring in, you know, just some of the greatest talents of the day to talk about the great new candidate races that are coming around here in South Dakota.
We got a thick update this time with Pat Powers on the phone with us.
We do. It's new candidate roundup, and we have Pat Powers help us get through it.
Well, I will endeavor.
Pat, where do you want to start? You mentioned at the beginning of the show we might break some news. You want to?
Oh well, you know, there's, you know, we talk about the candidate list, and there's stuff being updated constantly. I've got my list on my website that I even color coded all the primaries because I couldn't even keep track. But you know, starting with some of the news stuff. Hot off the list, I had a conversation with Tim Goodwin, who it looks like he is going to enter the district.
Goodwin's getting into third. He's finally announcing.
He looks like he is going to enter
District 30 House race. Got fun.
That's a big one. So that's a very big one.
So that's okay. If I have that right, is it now going to be Tim Goodwin, Amber Hulse?
House race.
Okay.
You're going for House.
So who is that in the House then?
Well, and that's so there was already a big primary there. You know, Trish Ladner is the only incumbent. Then you have the evangelical camera guy, Matthew Monfort.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I keep forgetting about that guy.
Patrick Bauman, who ran 2 years ago,
was in D.C. on the 6th.
Stephen Saint, who's the president of the South Dakota Campground Association. Then you have Matthew Smith, who got kicked off of.
He was that wingnut on Coda, yeah.
They must have got tired of him featuring Taffy Howard and Tanchi Weaver, and they said that they just couldn't take anymore. So they booted him off the air.
And let me frame an argument there. On the show that's ran Sean Hannity for years and ran Rush Limbaugh for years, even that station thought these people were too far.
Yes.
Holy buckets.
Now, And now it's my understanding that Representative Krall from Hill City was, it was unknown whether he was going to run, and it sounds like he's probably not going to, which is why it sounds like Tim Goodwin is getting it.
That's good news for Dave Call, because it got really confusing. Call. Yeah, so that's good news for him.
But, wow. but that's the newest hot off the press update.
I thought it was going to be for Senate. I'll admit, I really thought he was going to put his hand in there for Senate and blow up that Julie Amber race.
I'm glad he didn't.
I'm a little bummed he isn't.
You know, Julie hasn't filed yet.
Really?
Well, I mean, come on.
It's Amber Hulse and this Foster Forest. I don't know anything about that guy. Do you, Pat?
I think he was an accountant, I'm not sure much about 80s
bad guys.
But you know, newer entrant into the race, you know, Amber is out there like gangbusters. I think she's got an event tonight I saw on Facebook pop up. I mean, she's all over the place.
Well, and so is Julie Fry Mueller at those events.
she's busy chasing Amber's tail because she's trying to learn on how to communicate with constituents.
Everyone's going to get to know each other in Hot Springs this year.
Well, we also have a guy who he emailed me in the show his announcement, so we have to, you know, give him on the top. Senator Tim Reid has announced his reelection. You can also find his post on the Dakota War College.
Is that so, seven?
That's seven, right?
Okay.
Tim is waiting for reelection.
Brookings.
Yeah. Oh, there was another one that was just brand new, literally before we jumped on the show today. John Marquardt, who is the chairman of the Yankton County Commission, he is jumping into the primary for District 18 House, and that would be with Julie Alk and
Mike Stevens.
Thank you. And senior moment here. Now Alk hasn't filed yet, so she, you know, who knows? She might not file. But
when's the deadline? This is coming up, right? You got like another week or so.
Julie said at their last Cracker Barrel that she hadn't decided if she was going to run again or not, and she hasn't filed yet.
Yeah, and Mark Bartle, you know. Between him and Stevens, they'll give her a tough race.
Pat, you have until the end of the month, right? That's your
26th.
The 26th. Okay, so we're 11 days away from the list being the list.
Well, not really, because if you probably saw my post, because I complain about this every year. If you send it in by 5 p.m. local time, if you send it in registered mail. From your post office, then, you know, you're still considered within the deadline. If you mail it registered mail by 5 p.m. on the 26th.
Which is why you should just go in person and drop them off, or have someone drop them off for you in person. It's much easier that way.
I talked to somebody yesterday and they said, oh, I'm just going to drop it off when I go out to session. I said, no, get it there early in case you screw it up, because invariably, there's so many people who put their hands on these things when they have them filled out. Sometimes they do them at their local county auditor, and I've seen the county auditor screw up legislative petitions. And sometimes when they go have them notarized, sometimes they go into Hy-Vee and go to the person behind the desk, and there's somebody who maybe they have a notary on hand, and you know, there's just so many errors that can occur. So I always tell candidates, for God's sakes, get them in early, because if you at least have an opportunity to fix things. You know, getting 50 signatures is not a super heavy lift, but it's a lot tougher when you find out that the petitions were bad at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the 26th.
Sure is.
We had a few. Let's wing through some new other updates here. Isn't there's a new guy in isn't that, what is it, District 8 House? Is that Matt Matt, somebody. He's on, he's off, he's on. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Matt Wagner. And I understand he had withdrawn because he found out he might have a complication with doing some work for SDSU. And with the new Supreme Court interpretation, that went away. So he's unwithdrawn.
And then do you guys know Mark, is it Willardson in District 9?
Yep, former state representative Mark Willardson in District 9 is going to try to make the jump to the Senate.
Okay.
He's a pretty sharp guy. He is the reason that we have Uber and Lyft in South Dakota, because he was the author of the legislation that made that possible.
I love this guy's awesome in my book then. Right on, dude.
One of these guys who, he's been around for a while and just kind of behind the scenes, but, providing good, solid legislation like that.
Pat, we'd be remiss not to ask about, Casey Crabtree's District 8 race. If you're a fan of DakotaWarCollege.com, you have seen a number of posts about District 8 from Pat.
The thing is, I'm not the only one writing about
Mr.
Rick Weibel.
Mr. Weibel.
South Dakota Searchlight's written about him. South Dakota Watch is written about him. So in District 8, we've got Senate Majority Leader Casey Crabtree is the incumbent, is being challenged by election truther Rick Weibel. Rick was the one who ran the campaign for Monet Johnson for Secretary of State. But then after Monet got in, Rick made a lot of pronouncements about how things were going to be, and Monet just kind of started sidling away from him and said, I don't know this guy. And so Rick was disassociated and voted off the island.
Well, you know how that feels, Pat. That's okay.
That is true. While we're
there, Pat, you posted on your blog, Mona Johnson has done a good job with that office, better than I expected, especially during this election season.
Yeah, so covering far. The spread.
We also have new candidate in District 15 House race.
District 15 House race. That's Joni Cheddar. She ran 2 years ago. I've known Joni for years. She actually worked for my wife for Brookings School District. And then, she's worked in schools with kids with special needs. She's a mom. She's a businessman or businesswoman. Joni's pretty sharp. I would tell people, she's much more conservative than I am, but she doesn't lack empathy and she's a good person. But she's entered that race for District 15 House, and thank God, because we have two of the most awful candidates I've ever seen also running for the House in District 15. Mike Zitterick, who...
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, Mike Zitterick, who kind of writes his manifestos on Facebook and...
quite the keyboard assassin.
And then Brad Lindworm, who ran a couple years ago. Did he run quite once or twice before?
Didn't he try to get in and make some mistake?
I think he's run a couple times.
Yeah, and Brad did some he went down to Florida for a while. He came back, and then he did some district hunting and started putting up billboards before he declared where he was going to
Toby Doden School of Political Acumen.
Yeah.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah.
I'll be writing more on why I think Brad's an awful candidate in weeks to come. But suffice it to say, yeah, we don't want those guys. Joni's great. Love to have another good candidate.
And I'd say about District 15 too. That is the downtown, what we call Cathedral District in Sioux Falls, and we think of it as being that's the Democratic district. Now, actually, 10 is more Democratic. And if you look at 15, it has the 33% Republican, 28% Democrat. So the Republicans have a 5-point advantage over the Democrats, but then 38% independent. It's the highest percentage of independents of any district in the state.
That is going to be a wild general.
So that's been Linda Dubé and Caden Whitman, and now Eric Mucky is running. And, you know, it'll be very competitive, but people have a tendency to write that district off for the Democrats, and they really shouldn't anymore. I mean, it's a very competitive district.
It's always been hard to find good candidates there. It's been the biggest problem for us. At least it was a problem last time, and it's becoming a problem this time.
You know, when I first got involved in politics way back when, 35 years ago, for District 15, the Republican Party came up with their candidates, and it was Tom Dempster, who, you know, obviously went on to run in another area, and George Boom of George Boom Funeral Homes. Mm-hmm. You know, so two absolutely phenomenal candidates, you know, great names for Sioux Falls, and they just got slaughtered. You know, and that's how Democratic the district was. I mean, unless you came from the union, it wasn't going to happen.
God, this is so strange for Republicans to be in this position.
Well, you know, keep in mind, I mean, we're in the salad days when before it was, you know, we had used to be, you know, it was competitive and we lost the Senate. Now, you know, we've enjoyed such an unbroken string of victories. You know, it's why I preach that we need quality candidates, because we start losing, you know, we'll get back to those days when, yeah, it's a little tougher environment.
Well, it's also a tough environment for Senator Erin Tobin. She's going to war against the End Time Army out in District 21.
I forgot about this.
There was, you know, the hard right,
even for South Dakota's taste, this is hard right. This is real.
Yep.
You know, we're a checkerboard space away from the dude in the buffalo hat.
Yeah. My Kayla, I might be Michaela. I'm not sure. Michaela Voida. And,
she's got some thoughts.
Yeah. She's got
some thoughts.
Yeah. That's putting it mildly. You know, she participates with a kind of a online church, and, you know, I didn't learn my religion that way, but that's, you know, all, you know, more power to her.
Hey, not all cults are dangerous, guys. It's fine.
Well, Pat, is there anybody else we got to cover?
Well, you know, before we go, I would go back to Michaela. Apparently somebody was posting on her Facebook page a couple days ago, pointed out my post talking about how she popped up as part of a religious group, and she did offer that apparently me, while I still have breath, I can still be touched by Jesus, and there's only one unforgivable sin.
Oh, good, Pat. Well, I'm glad you still got that going for you.
You know,
good job, buddy.
I can be touched by Jesus.
Way to be saved. That's like them dudes at the rally. You pray for, they touch your shoulder, and they could be walking by them in the main street or whatever, and they're dragging across, and they, you know, touch you on the shoulder and talk about the end times, and, you know, give you a little high five, and on your way, buddy.
I did hear Jordan or Tom Pischke has his he is out with his petitions. Went start going out right after session.
You better go sign for him.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. Ryan Maher is moving over to the back to the House. He actually has a primary in District 28A. A gal named Jana Hunt is going to challenge him for that House seat. I mean, Ryan.
Pretty, you know, tough, Ryan, for Ryan to lose.
Tough. Ryan runs pretty tough. So, he's so well known, I can't imagine anybody making a dent.
It'd be like Gary Kamak losing, right? Like, even though a couple of them get close, it's just tough to see him going down in 28A.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there was another retread. District 29 House, there's no primary yet, but Kathy Rice, who ran 2 years ago, is jumped back in. In fact, speaking of Kamak, she's running for the House seat in that district that Kirk Chafee's vacating due to term limits and going up to the Senate. Kathy's going to give it another try. I'm assuming there'll be another candidate there in Meade County.
We're getting down to the wire, Jake and Pat and Tony. You only got a couple weeks to get your name into the candidate list.
Registered mail, as Pat would say.
Yes, send it registered mail.
So I'll end with a quick hypothetical, guys. I've been in the advertising business for 2 decades, and this is a couple things I know. I know that if you have a social media account with a lot of following and a company gives you a service, that's called an endorsement ad.
Uh-huh.
I'm just making a comment on the general what I know about my field. I don't mean that. None of that comes with an accusation of any sort. I'm just explaining how my business can work. And, you know, no one gets a set of veneers for free is, I think, what I'm saying. It just has never happened in the history of veneers or Twitter.
It's a good way to bury this one at the end of the show.
I just, you know, I'm looking at the clock. I know we got to end, and I just can't not say something.
Interesting. That's all I'll say. Interesting.
I guess more to come. Now, again, I'm not saying anything. I'm sure everything's fine. I'm sure, also, it doesn't matter. I just wonder if there's just like, are they just sitting around like, think we can get away with a set of teeth? I bet you we can get away with a set of teeth. Who's going to, you know, all right. All right, it's the Billies, Jake.
Thank you, everybody, for coming to a star-studded event. We had some fantastic guests. As I said again, Petulant, the happy blogger, whatever you want to call him. Pat Powers, the owner and proprietor of DakotaWarCollege.com. And our most visited guest, Representative Tony Van Huysen, the expert on history of South Dakota.
From Jake in the East, I'm Murdoch in the West. This has been the Billies on Dakota Town Hall.
See you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly podcast. Episodes are available every Friday. For more information or to request availability, please go to DakotaTownHall.com. Dakota Town Hall is presented in partnership with Home Slice Audio, produced by Leslie Klein. Music and audio production by Oakley Ty. Research by Home Slice Audio and Dakota Town Hall. Graphics by Timmy Grablander. Social media content by Scout Wheeler and website design by Trey Wynn. Editorial advisor and executive producer, Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Special thanks to all of our weekly guests. While we try to be accurate with all of our information, this show is recorded live and errors do occur. For corrections, please visit DakotaTownHall.com. Hosted by Jake Schoenbeck and Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Dakota Town Hall, another Home Slice audio production.